I don't think I'll ever get tired of that song. I've been hearing it my whole life. It's always good to know that time is the year is back again where you can hear Bobby Boris Pickett. John Michael Greer is the author of Monsters, an Investigator's Guide to Magical Beings. And we have 1 hour left for you to jump in on the phones to ask your questions to get his guidance as an investigator into the occult as to what you should do if you feel like you are plagued with this. And maybe you're not. Maybe you're skeptically standing on the sidelines and you've been taking notes and there's some more that you want to learn about a variety of these monsters, these magical beings. Have we told you enough about vampires, ghosts, mermaids, barely got to dragons, spirits, angels, demons? I think I'd like to hear more about all of these. We'll find out where you take the conversation coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. John Michael Greer, if you go to the coasttocoastam.com website, you can link up to John Michael Greer from there. But while you're there, John, you can also see the photos that people have put together of me with beards. And one of them, I look a little bit like you. Do you still have that beard that's on the back?
I still have that beard.
Where is it down to now?
It's stayed at the same length for, the last 15 years or so. It just gets so long.
Is that a spell you put on it?
No,
or
I wish.
Do you have to trim it?
Actually, I always wanted a real proper Gandalf-style beard coming down to my belly button, but no such luck.
It just won't grow anymore? It's
it just
tired?
Won't grow anymore. It's gotten as long as it's getting, and now it gradually turns gray without picking up much in the wavelength. Yeah.
Okay, so it's a little grayer than in the photo.
I've grayed. That photo is maybe 8 years old now. I've grayed a bit, and the hairline's creeping back. I don't know of any magical spell that will change that.
So this was back when you were with ZZ Top. Back when you were.
There's three other guys who have beards that I envy, yes.
Yeah. Let's go east of the Rockies for John on Coast to Coast AM. John?
Hi, this is Greg.
Oh, all right. Well, I had you down as John, east of the Rockies, but go ahead. You be Greg.
Hi,
go
John.
Hello.
This is Greg from Cincinnati, and I wanted to know about the Zodiacarian priest or the Magi and how they're related to the djinns or genies. I met a girl from Israel, and I said, you would get the word magi, you get magic. And she said, did they really exist? She says, well, where do you think the word flying carpet came from? And I'm thinking, this is ancient technology. It looked like magic because they could do things. They were smart. And I'm trying to figure out if the djinns or genies were any way correlated with them.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, well, basically, it's a real common habit these days to think of magic as being technology back in the old days, because we're good at technology, we think in technological terms, okay? But in fact, if you go back to a period when they didn't have access to the sort of fossil fuel energy that runs our industrial society, people used their own inner powers to a much greater extent than we do nowadays. A flying carpet, we think, it's a levitation device, a hovercraft, what have you. In fact, if you go back to the old legends, what you find out is that it's part of a system of astral projection. You have a carpet, you've worked various complicated ritual practices, you have this kneeling down on the carpet, settling on the carpet is part of the drill that you've basically practiced as a way of learning to do astral projection.
So in this case, then, the idea of being on a flying carpet, it's an astral projection from where you are kneeling in meditation.
Your body is sitting on this carpet. You may be 100 miles away whizzing through the air. It's simply, again, as I was saying just before we had the break, human beings have enormous potential. And in our technological society, we basically surrendered most of that potential to our machines. Well, and so we tend to think other people, well, yeah, they were smart. They must have used machines. No, they were smart. They developed their own powers.
What about the relationship between jinns and genies?
Well, it's the same word. The jinn, that's the Arabic word. It actually comes originally from the Latin word genius, we'd say, which meant a guardian spirit long before it meant somebody who was really smart.
Hmm. And so the belief here, this is getting passed down, obviously, a couple of generations and bouncing around between different cultures. But it is a druid or somebody who's looking at magical creatures, where do you put genies?
Well, first of all, again, you make a note of, okay, here's the literary thing, the bottle, you know, I dream of genie and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
You bracket that and say, okay, well, that's a nice bit of literary imagery. Let's actually look at the folklore. And in fact, jinns, genies, whatever you want to call them, in Arabic culture, that's simply their term for spirits. There are good genies, there are evil genies. There are a lot of, some of the demons of Arabic culture are jinns as well. It's simply a different way of talking about the many, many different kinds of non-physical entities that actually surround us all the time.
Where does the wishes thing comes into it?
Again, there was a cycle of legends. Well, originally, it built up around King Solomon. We've all heard of King Solomon, King Solomon's temple, King Solomon's mines, this kind of stuff. King Solomon in early medieval and actually all through the Middle Ages was believed to be the best magician that ever lived. And one of the legends about him is that he had taken all of these evil spirits and bound them into bottles and tossed them into the ocean. So storytellers thought, ooh, what a neat idea. Imagine what happens if somebody found one of those bottles and opened it. You know, it has about as much to do with the reality of the situation as Bela Lugosi in a black cape going, you know, the children of the night, how sweet they sing. It has to do with real vampires.
Right. As a Freemason, are there not legends of King Solomon that come down through Freemasonry?
There's a lot of material about the building of King Solomon's temple and about King Solomon that come through Freemasonry. Legend is the right word. I don't think anybody in Masonry these days believes that they're historically accurate accounts, but they have a lot of symbolic meaning to us, and they teach certain lessons about partly about ethics, partly about spirituality.
Well,
like
always an interesting difference between fact and truth.
Always.
And that you get truth without facts is something which is always available to us. Well, let's go west of the Rockies. He's down as Don, but let's find out who really is there. Hey, Don, you're talking with John. Go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Greer, I've read your book, and I believe I have a haunting situation where I'm working. I'm a security guard at night. And basically, there's been footsteps where there shouldn't be because once this place clears out about 9 o'clock, there's only me here. I'm locked in a gate.
Mm-hmm.
And they deliver trucks. I mean, I hear stuff moving on the trucks.
Mm-hmm.
I see stuff out of the corner of my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And certain times I get this feeling like, malevolent feeling like when I'm on patrol.
Mm-hmm. That kind of thing is
what
extremely.
What can I do to deal with this?
Well, it's a complicated question. Partly, you may simply have to learn to live with it. Because if the haunting is, I mean, this could be a perfectly normal haunting situation. This sort of thing happens very often. If you don't have either a lot of esoteric, a lot of medical training or things like that, or don't know somebody who does, trying to disrupt a haunting, trying to banish a spirit in this way, it's challenging work, and it's something that should be left to people who actually know what they're doing.
Have you ever tried talking to it, Don?
Pardon me?
Have you ever tried talking to it?
Yes, I have.
Did it answer?
What comes to you?
I've tried talking to it, and I've gotten the hair on the back of my head coming up. I don't get a good feeling.
Mm-hmm. Probably the thing to do, just do you belong to any particular religion?
I'm a practicing Wiccan, actually.
Oh, well, there you go. Depending on the specific tradition of Wicca that you practice, there may be some banishing rituals or similar, or some protective workings that you
can do. I've tried a couple of those, and I do have an enchanted crystal I carry with me all the time.
So,
and that, like I said, I still get the malevolent feelings.
Well, yeah, but it's entirely, there may be a malevolent entity there. That doesn't mean it can necessarily harm you. And so you may just have to live with the ghost.
Don, how do you feel about that?
Well, it's not so much me. I just get the malevolent feelings, but a couple of the other guards that work here, they go, oh, man, I just had the creep last night, and I've heard stuff knocking on the shack, and this is like a glass enclosed shack. There's no way anything could sneak up on it.
Right, yeah, right.
Exactly.
What do you,
unless they're sleeping, so.
Any thought about where it comes from?
Well, I really don't know. I'm out here in Renton, Washington, and this is an industrial area. We've got Boeing, and I'm right next to the Kenworth plant. And I really haven't been able to find much about the history of this place, so I really don't know what it could be.
Still, Renton goes back quite a long ways. I used to live in Seattle, so it's, I'm not completely unfamiliar with Renton. And it's been around for quite a while, so it's anyone's guess. It could be almost anything. But if you might want to talk to people, you know, in the Wiccan community, if you belong to a coven, talk to the High Priestess. They may have some specific technical knowledge that they can use. I'm not an
Evolution. Oh, I've used a couple of the things some of my friends have suggested, and it doesn't seem to work.
Well, yeah. Sometimes
one person thinks it could be a, pardon the term, emotional vampire, because some people, their moods change rapidly down here. It's like a person will come in all happy and fresh, and within 5 or 10 minutes, they are just like they're PMSing or something.
Yeah,
that even happens with me, and I'm the most even-tempered person. Anyone will tell you that. They say I got the patience of a plaster saint.
Not a positive situation then, but...
Definitely.
Yeah.
Even PMS survives death, is what you're saying?
Well, I don't know.
The life force that drain your body, as it is, PMS. From well, thank you, Don. That's very interesting. I appreciate that. He said vampire, nothing else has worked. Would it be wrong for me, John Michael Greer, to suggest holding up a crucifix with that... Does that mean anything to you?
My experience is the only people who can do the crucifix thing are people who are devout Christians. The point is that you're using a symbol of your own faith. Don might want to try tracing a pentagram.
Tracing a pentagram?
A pentagram, because that's the Wiccan holy symbol.
Right. Is that would you trace that around the whole shack?
There are various ways to do it. You could simply, you know, just as a Christian might hold up a crucifix, Don might hold up, he might have a silver pentagram handy.
Or draw one on his hand.
Or draw one on his hand, or draw one in the air.
Right, so it shows next to me, just hold it up and say, talk to the pentagram. You know, because the face ain't listening. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to the wild card line, Ryan on Coast to Coast AM. Ryan?
Hello, how are you guys doing?
All right, so you're talking with John Michael Greer.
Yes, real quick, that last caller, I'm not a security guard, but I like to listen to Coast in the middle of the night in my car. One thing I learned a long time ago is when you're out in the middle of the night, late at night, you just got to accept some strange noises.
Good point.
I used to work night shift in a nursing home, and things get strange when it's dark.
Yeah. Mr. Greer, I had a question.
Uh-huh.
Being like a practitioner of what you say, like the energy life force that's around us, and being more in touch with it, like what you said, like a true reality, the fact that you practice these methods on a regular basis, how has that affected, you know, without getting into any detail, your life in regards to relationships, finance, happiness?
Oh, it's been very positive. I would have to say that almost everything that I've accomplished in my life, I've accomplished because of my magical training, because of the work that I've done. This is something that gets kind of complex in the occult community sometimes, because some people will do this big, you know, oh, poor me, I have such powers, look at how much I suffer. And, well, you know, if what you're doing is just making you miserable and poor and unhealthy, then you're doing something wrong. My experience has been that certainly those people I know who are good at magic or who do various kinds of energy work, Qigong or what have you, they benefit from it. They become stronger, they become healthier, they become more successful at whatever they choose to do.
Are you a family man, John Michael Greer?
I'm married. I don't have any children.
Because I would think that would be awkward in one sense, like being who you are and then, say, going to bring your dad to school day or, like, you know, where your career day and the dads come in and talk about
actually,
what they do.
Actually, what I talk to, you know, when my career comes up, I say, well, I'm a writer.
Right.
You know, everybody's cool about that. Well, what do you write? Well, a whole range of stuff. I write some history. I do books on weird things like monsters and so on. It's, oh, okay.
And that usually is probably enough for them to...
Oh, that's all people want to hear.
That's all they want to hear.
Yeah. I don't say, well, yes, I'm an archdruid.
Right. I'm an archdruid of the order of... They don't get... That would freak them out.
Druids in America. That's, you know...
Want to see my hat?
It depends very much on the audience. A lot of people in the Druid scene, in the pagan scene, in the magical scene are what Wiccans refer to as the broom closet.
Right.
Yeah, you know, they're just, you don't talk to people about things that are going to simply make them freak out.
Let's go to Ivan on the international line on Coast to Coast AM for John Michael Greer. Ivan?
Yes, good morning. Good morning, John. Good morning, Ian. Great show.
Thank you.
I'd like to bring up something that is ordinarily this kind of conversation. A year ago, I would have fallen on the floor laughing. Mm-hmm. Not really laughing, but just saying, okay, he's making a buck, interesting guy, intelligent, and I would have dealt with it at that level. Mm-hmm. Until I ran into something that I could not get my head around in any way. My girlfriend was in a bar, and we're in Jamaica. And she was in a bar called Vamps, oddly enough, which I don't think had anything to do with it, but I ran into a vampire, which to me, you know, in dealing with it at first was just, I was dealing with a goth guy in my head. And my girlfriend and I had gotten into a very, very bad argument, quiet but bad. And I left, and I figured it'd be better off that I leave, and then I decided after about an hour to come home, to come back to the bar. So when I went back into the bar, I walked up around to where she was sitting at a regular bar situation, and she had her head down a little bit, and she was kind of crying, and somebody was over her and around her, but in almost a malevolent way, and it was this goth-looking fella to me, in my head. So at first I just approached him and I tapped him on the shoulder and I said, listen, I said, this is my girlfriend. We had a fight. You know, just if you could, I'll take care of it. And he looked at me with the strangest eyes and almost froze me. And he pushed me in my chest. Now, I'm kind of a hard guy, an ex-boxer, tough kid, and this whole business, knocked out 30 guys in my life, if 20. So he hit me in my chest with an open hand, and I sort of went flying, but it more hurt than I went flying. So I stepped up to him without thinking, without my heart pounding, very casually, and I hit him, bang, dead on the chin, which is good night, Irene, ordinarily. If you hit somebody in the right place on the chin, that's
the way. They're down.
They're down. Good night. And if you know how to throw a punch and so forth, then you're not all nervous and hyped out about it. I hit him dead bang on the chin. He took like one half a step back, looked at me, smiled with when his mouth went up. He started almost not to laugh, but more smiled at me. And I saw his like his canine teeth, canines, long teeth on the side. And my heart started to race. And then after that, his face came down at me, looked me right in the eyes a second time, slapped me gently, comparatively, you would say gently. My head almost came off my shoulders. And as I said, I'm very much in shape, and I'm very, very used to fighting for whatever reason, born and raised in the Bronx and all this silliness.
That'll do it.
I'm sorry?
That'll do it, yeah. Go on.
Yeah, I really was, and I really did have that kind of a background, not as a negative fighting person, but defending friends and stuff.
Sure. Understood.
So when he did that, somebody came and stepped in between us, somebody who knew him, and said to me, Ivan, no, Ivan, a person from the area and Jamaican. And this other person turned around very casually and walked away. And when he walked away, I didn't notice it until he walked away. He was wearing a black cape, which I couldn't see in this black bar. And then the gentleman that I was with, a native to Jamaica, said to me, Ivan, this man that you were just dealing with is a vampire. And down there, I know they deal with black magic and various things, and they're predisposed to that. And my first response was that they were, you know, predisposed to magic and black magic and various things.
This guy clearly had some unusual abilities.
Well, I want you guys to both hang on to that thought, and I'm going to ask that they put Ivan back on hold on the international line, and then John Michael Greer, I'd like to get your response to Ivan's story, because even there, that doesn't fit the description of vampires as I read it in your book, Monsters. So what advice would you give him to help him process this experience that Ivan says he has and We'll get John Michael Greer's response to it coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we were just on the international line with Ivan, and we're talking with John Michael Greer, who is a monster investigator. And Ivan was telling us the story in Jamaica of having a tiff with his girlfriend, leaves, comes back to the bar where they've been hanging out, only to encounter somebody who's talking with her, who Ivan understands right away is kind of in a rival situation. Ivan's not afraid of a physical confrontation when necessary. And so he was sort of overtaken by the power of this guy when he shoved him initially, and then as the disagreement escalated from there. Ivan, you said that you saw fangs and a cape. I was kind of with you right up until fangs and a cape. Tell me more about fangs and a cape.
Well, that's what hit me, and that's what changed my life forever, because that's why I thought it was somewhat of a joke until he turned around and left. He left very gently and very quietly, non-threatening, and I almost had the feeling that he felt he was defending himself.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like he picked up my vibrations of being very intense, coming back to my girlfriend, maybe misinterpreting, maybe mm-hmm. he was even trying to console her. And on mm-hmm. some level, I had a feeling of guilt, almost like he was toying with me, mm-hmm. put me away in a physical way, and left quietly, almost like a gentleman. Mm-hmm. And as far as the cape and the what you would see is canine teeth, I cannot explain that other than maybe he was dressed up for the night, or, in fact, I was really looking at somebody who lives in that world. I don't know how to explain it.
There are a lot of people who live in that world. I mentioned toward the beginning of our time on the show that there are a lot of people who have become very fascinated by the media image of the vampire, by Dracula, by Lestat, by all these people. There are actually people who have gone out there and have cosmetic dentistry done
sure.
to give them fangs.
Yeah, teeth filed and
yeah. Well, literally, you know, artificial
right.
implants. So they literally have fangs. There are people who do the vampire thing. Some of them are into various kinds of practice, magical, martial, what have you. You apparently ran into somebody who had learned some of the energetic dimensions of the martial arts, quite possibly.
Felt like it.
Yeah. You know, that stuff's definitely out there. I've known people in the martial arts community who could do some pretty remarkable things.
With just one hand.
With just one hand.
Yeah.
Like the guy I saw who took, you've seen Chinese roof tiles, big, heavy baked things. They're basically fired pottery.
Right.
Who put a stack of 12 of these things up and said, okay, which one do you want me to break? You know, they're all stacked up. And he said, like the eighth one, he slaps the top of them. The eighth one bursts into powder and the other ones are untouched.
So would you put him, though, John Michael Greer, that character, that person in the bar, mm-hmm. would you put them into the category of vampire?
Not in the traditional sense. I would say that it's somebody who has adopted the media vampire role, who has entered into that into that image, into that world, to use Ivan's term, and who also has some, whether it's some magical knowledge or some martial arts knowledge. You know, as I was saying earlier, people have amazing potential. This guy obviously had expressed some of that, whether because he was doing the vampire routine, because, as Ivan says, maybe he was just dressed up for the night or something.
Right. Well, you know, vampires, in your description and in your book, and thank you, by the way, Ivan, for hanging on, and I hope that was helpful. God bless you. But as you think about that vampire, mm-hmm. it doesn't fit. Vampires aren't often in the consolation role in
exactly.
your book.
One of the things that I mentioned several times, we've got our categories, and then there's the world.
Right.
And the world is always throwing us curveballs.
Right. Like, where would you put Count Chocula?
in my bowl for
in
breakfast,
your cereal bowl.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go. That's all you need. All right, Jason on the first time caller line on Coast to Coast AM for John Michael Greer. Jason?
Yes, hello.
Hello.
My name is Jason, and I'm experienced with various forms of magical training, including some pagan and Christian magics. Mm-hmm. I just want to say I'm extremely experienced with with astral work, with, mm-hmm. you know, other realms, other planes and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And listening to this last call, I wanted to put forth another idea about this. I mean, of course, in this physical realm, we're only going to have humans here. Mm-hmm. But as you've attested, humans are very powerful. Now, I do know of vampiric beings that exist in dark realms that are far removed from this realm, and that if a human was possessed of a, not a near plane vampiric spirit, but a far plane demonic vampiric being, mm-hmm. that they might create something like what he's seen.
Might, although that would, you know, the sort of consolation quality that Ivan referred to, that would seem very unlikely for somebody possessed by a demonic being. But, you know, right. It could have been misunderstanding. Well, yes, it's also possible that what we were looking at was some kind of interaction between a human being and something from one of the inner planes, whether near, far, you know, astral geography is a very complicated science.
Right.
As, of course, you know.
And it could be that this was the initial stages of a seduction, of an evil seduction, and it could have taken the form of a false consolation as just kind of a way of disarming the victim.
It's impossible to know. Mm-hmm. The question in that case is, why did the vampire turn? Since the vampire obviously, or this guy, this person, we'll call him the vampire for want of a better term,
right.
Presumably he could have taken Ivan to the cleaners.
Right.
basically tossed him out with last week's fish, but right. Instead, he turned and walked away.
Yep.
Of course, we'll never know why.
Either a remarkable display of vampiric mercy or somebody who, as you said earlier, just wants to stay in the shadows, doesn't want the attention of a bar fight and the involvement of police and whatever.
Also another good point.
Well, thank you very much, everybody, so far. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get as many calls in as we can for John Michael Greer. And why don't I just ask you now, if you would, at the end of this hour, in light of all of the darker places where we have gone, I know you're very present with the need for the balance of energies. Uh-huh. So at the end of this hour, from your position as an arch druid, to share with us some parting wisdom that you would like us to take forward into the rest of our week, okay?
We'll do that.
Building up to Halloween next week, and of course, Art's ghost-to-ghost show on Halloween coming up on that special night. And we'll get your calls on next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. John Michael Greer, the author of Monsters, An Investigator's Guide to Magical Beings, kind of like a real-life Van Helsing, although maybe not as buff. I don't know. It's up to you. I don't know. All I can see is your face on the back of the book. So if you're as ripped as he was in that movie.
I wish. No.
Let's go to the wild card line for Chris on Coast to Coast AM for John Michael Greer. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, great. How you doing, Ian and John? I had a quick comment and a quick question, if you could both elaborate, and I'll listen off the air. I, as of yet, just myself, been unable to interact with my dreams. I'm trying to learn as much as I can about it and do it. But right now, I dream. I can't do anything about it. I wake up. It seems like it's real, and this and that goes that. That mm-hmm. being said, can these things, we'll just say monsters, instead of picking out several ones, can they physically manifest in our dreams? And if so, can they do us harm? And if so, is there anything we can do to prevent against that?
Well, before you hang up, Chris, let me reframe what you said there a little bit, just and see whether you feel good about this before John Michael Greer jumps in. But would it be fair enough to say that maybe the other question is in our dreams, do we enter into the state where these, you know, etheric monsters exist?
Okay.
I mean, maybe that's another way of looking at it. Is it, they're not entering into our realm. We're entering into theirs. John Michael Greer, where are you with either of those two ideas?
Well, dreams, the tradition is that in dream space, we're dealing with a level above the etheric, above the level of life force. We're in the realms of consciousness, what some occult writers have called the astral plane. It does occasionally happen that monstrous entities can appear in dreams. I've had a situation where, I have lucid dreams. I have dreams where I'm aware that I'm dreaming, where I'm experiencing things in the dream and going, oh, this is interesting, this is a dream, and where I can take conscious action and so on. And there have been situations where I've had, you know, the entity looming up and had to do various magical things actually while dreaming to deal with this thing. Was it a dream? Was it a real monster? I haven't the least idea. I'm not entirely sure the question means anything. Typically, as with any monster situation, there's a lot of old folklore about protection against monstrous beings. If you belong to any particular religion, you'll find that there's various protective prayers and things like that. Every religion has things like that. It's a fairly rare occurrence for people in the ordinary way of things to have real monster problems in their dreams.
And if it's happening to him, should it happen to him? What would you recommend?
What I would recommend is either talk to somebody who has specific magical training or learn some of the protective methods in my book, in some other books. There are books on psychic self-defense that can also help. Those practices done in waking life will have effects on your energy body, on your body, your physical body, your mind, all this stuff that will help protect you against monsters.
Chris, I thought it was a very provocative question. Thanks for jumping in.
Let's go.
Wildcard Line and KJ on Coast to Coast AM for John Michael Greer. KJ?
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Hi.
I have a question, a couple of things, but I'm going to focus on one thing. I used to be very, psychically active, but in tune with these energies. I used to live in Ohio when I was a kid, and I used to play in the woods all the time, and mm-hmm. I was very, I guess I'm, I don't know if there's any particular religion as far as Wiccanism where you're more in tune with animals or people, what have you, but I was more in tune with the surroundings, just the mm-hmm. plants. I can feel them. I can feel the energy of earth I felt mm-hmm. all around me. I moved out to California, and there's really not much here as far as that type of thing. I felt really dead. I disconnected from that, and I actually became like an Anton LaVey, Satanist type of thing, out of the flesh
here.
I'm awakening to that, and it's becoming kind of discerning because I've seen things around me. I know that they're not supposed to be here, almost like it's a, like they're here because I'm willing them in a certain way, like opening up a portal. I don't know. I don't think I'm that powerful, but...
What are you seeing? What do you mean by that?
Well, a few weeks ago, I was having a lot of problems with people in my life, and I was seeing just like dark beings, you know, things out of the corner of my eyes, and I just had malevolent feelings around me. But I'm a type of person that I can't see auras, but I can feel someone. I know how they feel. I know, when they walk in the room, I can feel somebody.
Okay, so basically what you're saying is that you're sensitive. And that you have non-physical perceptions, and right now they're non-physical perceptions. The quality of them is kind of grubby, shall we say.
Correct, but they're always present, and I don't think
exactly.
Anything from me exactly.
Okay. Now, I know a number of people who are sensitives, who are clairvoyants and things like this. The fact that you're always perceiving this stuff, that's fairly normal for people who have that particular gift. The fact that they're negative and malevolent, that's a reflection of, to some extent, the headspace that you're in.
Okay.
We tune ourselves like radios, okay? Whatever we're vibrating in tune with, whatever our dial is tuned to, is what we're going to pick up.
Okay.
What I would encourage you to do is find a system, a spiritual practice that meets your personal needs, that resonates with you, and start doing it. Because that's a way to start, if you will, tuning up to a higher frequency, tuning yourself, getting in touch with energies and thus psychic surroundings that you'll be more comfortable with.
Thank you, KJ. I appreciate that. You bring up the question of shadow people, mm-hmm. though. Are you familiar with that term? And
I've heard it with a couple of different meanings. What do you have in mind?
Well, it's been a discussion on this show. People who have testified that they have experienced a shadow person who appeared in a human-like form but had no distinguishing, you know, facial characteristics, and they were different than a ghost. They were a shadow, and that frequently there was that sense of them not being up to any good.
Well, as I said, you know, there are many, many entities in the universe. Some of them are not very friendly.
How about, since he brought up Ohio, it reminded me, too, of this story we've heard from a few people who have had sightings of something they call the man dog in Ohio. It's not like a werewolf, but it's more like, and it's physical. It wasn't considered, you know, astral in any way. Any idea on that?
Well, I don't know enough about it to, I'd have to get some information. I'm not sure that I could speculate just right off the bat. One thing I will point out is that, there are many things that exist on the that astral, etheric, non-physical beings can seem very, very physical if you're encountering them, you know, right out there in front of you. There's a lot of things that people think are physical, like the Loch Ness Monster, actually, which does not behave like a physical entity at all.
Amber goes east of the Rockies for John Michael Greer on Coast to Coast AM. Hi, Amber.
Hi to both of you.
Hello.
I'm a first-time caller and a new listener, and what I'm calling about may have to do with the shadow people, actually. I want to talk about regarding a presence in the room which results in a sleep paralysis.
Oh, yes.
Yes, I actually experienced this when I was around 14. Mm-hmm. I was in that moment where you're not quite awake, not quite asleep, and I feel hands around my neck.
Mm-hmm. That is incredibly common. It's scary.
Absolutely.
It's incredibly common. Has it happened to you since?
No, it was just that one time.
That
I opened up my eyes, and I still feel the hands around my neck because I would have thought it would have went away. And only a few seconds after, when I could actually move my hands, did it, of course, go away. I never saw anything.
That is so classic. If you can find a copy of David Hufford's book, The Terror That Comes in the Night, that's the title. Don't think it's still in print, but a lot of libraries have it. Read that book. You will find just that same experience, that sort of experience over and over and over again. It's very common.
I've heard that.
What do you attribute it to?
A spirit, an evil spirit, possibly vampiric, possibly otherwise. I actually discussed that one in my book because it's one of the best examples of a monster-related phenomenon that a lot of people have experienced but that has been swept under the rug by our modern scientific society.
Well, that two good sources to go with, Amber, and you can start by linking up at coasttocoastam.com to John Michael Greer, and the book is Monsters and Investigators' Guide to Magical Beings. Now, I asked whether you might be able to share with us some parting wisdom in that, you know, let's just say some of the last couple of callers we've had might have thrown somebody into kind of a spooky mood.
The spooky mood, yeah. People tend to get scared. And there are scary things out there. But the thing that I would stress is that we can so easily get wrapped up in this idea that there are these strange, powerful things out there, but we're also strange, powerful beings. Human beings have immense potential. We don't have to be, you know, cooped up in little boxes packed with machines. We don't have to depend on our technological toys. We have capacities to live more fully, to accomplish more things, to experience realms that most people never even imagine. That possibility is before us at every moment. And especially nowadays, one of the great advantages of recent times is that there's a huge amount of information available to anybody who wants to pay attention to it. There's a huge amount of information on how to open your eyes, how to expand your life, to reach out into these broader perspectives and embrace a larger life in a larger world.
Well, and this would be the perfect book then to arm yourself with if you're going to go down that road and explore those ideas.
Monsters is a good book. I have a number of other books that are specifically on magical practice. Those are other. I mean, there's a lot of good literature out there, but certainly Monsters is a great place to start.
John Michael Greer, he ain't Snape.
I'll have to get that on button.
And thank you so much for your candor and for sharing your spirit.
Thank you very much for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Great. We'll have you back, I know, sometime very soon on Coast to Coast AM, Deus Tiamat, and I do too.